not a business.
Well, but the reverse is now, though, that it was interesting in talking about razors, per se, way back in those times.
Yeah.
It must have been the forerunner of a knife, or a very sharp knife.
Right, right. There's
all
no
the
question
razor.
About
we
that.
We call them a razor, but it should
right.
have been probably a knife. That's
right,
why they shaved
right,
it off.
Right.
Well, I cut it off.
Well, yeah. Some say that there are some electric razors that are not permitted. You've got to use all an Orelco or something like that because
yeah,
that's different knives.
Yeah, there's some question about this or that, right?
Yeah.
I saw a tshuva by Rabbi Heinemann in Baltimore a couple of years ago. He wrote a tshuva about shaving.
Oh, really?
He says, if you've got to use an electric razor, make sure that it has dull blades.
Make sure it has dull blades.
It has dull blades.
It
has dull blades.
Dull.
It's
dull blades.
If it's sharp.
So what's the point
of
using it?
I think that what you might be saying, see, they have that, you know, the screen, and then the whole head vibrates back and forth.
Right.
Yeah, but as long as the knife doesn't come in contact with your skin, I
suppose. And the Norelco has
that rotary, yeah.
the whirling blade inside the mechanism. So you have two different versions of how the electric razor works. One has a screen underneath the screen, the whole screen with the holes in it. Cuts the hair.
I know.
So maybe the fellow in Baltimore was trying to be specific at that point about what the whirling blades with the knife edge on it or something.
Perhaps.
Who knows?
I don't know.
Phil is the one that read the dissertation.
His shot, as I say, his answer was use a dull razor, a dull electric razor.
Okay.
Much
that didn't sell, so he had a lot of sales on that, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
Okay.
All right, let's take a look at the Rashi right now. It's a great big Rashi over here. And see if we can understand what Rashi is saying. Okay. So he starts out by explaining the first part. Akareh kocha berosho, right? In other words, he makes a baldness in his head. Al hameis, for somebody who's dead, meforish b'gemara. Because if you...
Oh, right, yeah,
right.
Yeah, right.
You see, the Mishnah itself only mentions Hakareh Kocha Berosha. The question is, why does this person making a bald spot? So Rashi brings the fact that it's Al-Hameis for somebody who is dead. Okay. Mm-hmm. So he's supplying, in other words, the explanation why a person would do it. Then Hamakev Pashro shows somebody who rounds his head, coins with head, and says, Mishum Deboi Lemeymor Hai Ninhu Paasei Rosho Nokitlei. Because we're going afterwards to say what are the various corners of the head, so this is the reason why it's mentioned over here. All right, what is sorat or seret? Okay, of course the verb is sorat. Okay, in other words, he made a gash. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And seret would be the noun. He says osecha bura biyatzmo mishum tsar meso. He makes a wound in himself. Right, he wounds himself. Because of sorrow for the person who has passed away. Mourning, okay? Then it says, Hasoreit Sarita Achas Alameis Chayov, right? If somebody makes one cut for a dead person, then he is liable to Malchus, as we said. It says, Hocha Lavdavka Nokat Sarita Achas. It says, here actually we don't mean necessarily just one cut. El Mishum Deboy Lefluge Lekame. But inasmuch as afterwards we're going to make a distinction between Srita Achas Lishtei Sritos, between one cut and two cuts, so Nokat Lei Nami Hocha. So that's the reason why I mentioned it. But you know, in my opinion, it says that it doesn't really belong in the reading over there. All right. Srita Achas Al Hei Meisim, or Hei Sritos Al Meis Echot. Right? In other words, one cut either for five dead or five cuts for one dead, right? It says Begemora Marbile de Chaiva Kolachas. The Gemara is going to show why you are liable for each and every one of them. Chayav al Rosh, alright, so he deserves Malchus for, as we said, rounding the head, right? Al Hakofas al Rosh. In other words, for you know, making it round. So he's Chayav Shtei Malkios. He is liable to two sets of malchus. The shtei peir sheish l'rosh, because the head has two corners to it, right? Sheharosh kishtei chasichos, because the head, says Rashi, is as if it's divided into two different sections. Mokom haseyor chasicha achas, where the hair is, this is one section of the head. Mokin haponim ba'zokon chasicha achas. And where the face and the beard is, this is a different section of the head. Umis chabros, and they join zoom zoom, right? They join each other. Bitzad ho'ozen, right? Where at the side where the ear is, milifonov. In other words, right in front of where the ear is over here. In other words, this particular point, except it's over here, according to him. All right? Because he says, Mokom sheloazin tampla. Because this is the place where, in French, they call, and here it should have been not with that N, but it should have been with an Amen.
Amen.
Temple. In other words, this is where, all right? So in other words, we're talking now about the temples, okay? Visham Nikropeya, and that is called a corner. Why? Shasham Sofa Rosh, this is where the end of the head is. Makom Chibra Prokim, this is where the various points come together. V'nimtso, so we find Sheyesh Lo Shtei Peos, right? You have two corners. Tzidor Mekan, Tzidor Mekan. Now what is Tzidor? Tzidor is what we call a temple. That's the Aramaic word for a temple, right? There's a temple over here and a temple over there. One is called Bethel and the other one is called Sinai. The Chayav Alei Einstein, and you deserve two sets of Malkus if you go to either one. Okay, if you cut anyone.
You
Apilu, not one of Asachas Mishnei. Even if he took him simultaneously with his two hands. The Yavol Gav, the Chad Hasra, Kamasrele, even though they're only giving him one warning that he shouldn't do it. Al Takir, don't round your head. The zeal, because it's no good. Hocha peyo ikon, because here you have a peyo, the zeal, hocha peyo, and you have another peyo over there. So ikon, so since you have two different peyos, so even if you only got one set of warning, so nevertheless, and he went and he cut over here, you know, both of them simultaneously, so therefore he deserves how many sets of malchus?
Two.
Kidomer le gabon, as he says further on, gabe korcho. You know, in connection with baldness. How many times does he rip out hair, for example? You understand? Okay? All right. The Gabe Svita, and also connecting with, in connection with how many times does he going to lacerate himself? Okay? The Mayasinan, because we're going to bring down the Chayav al Kol Korcha, the Korcha al Kol Seret Veseret. That he's going to deserve malchus for each and every baldness that he, you know, that he makes, or for each and every gash that he does. When and inasmuch as we don't have to bring a pasuk to mistama, keheched aminam the sarat, yeah, the chayev akol service, that the word v'sarat means to. Obligate him, that is to make him liable for each and every seret. So, achin amri aminan, so therefore, likewise, we say that the same would apply to pa'as. That the word pa'as also is the chayiva called peyo v'peyo. That he deserves a set of malchus for each and every peyo. The whole love miyatura the krosh aminan le kulehai. Because we do not learn this, that because the Torah is repeating something that, you know, it could have saved itself. So culture came, the gimgum, this is, doesn't make very much sense over here, and as you can see there's a note that they don't know exactly what gimgum is, because usually gimgum means like there's a mistake in the language. Literally it means stammering, stuttering or something like that, gimgum. In other words, the reading was not very clear over here. Okay. All right. Kedamrinun the common, as we say, the sakinhu the chomesh esusoy nosha. That we'll come to this in the Gemara. That what he did is to take his five fingers, put it into a depilatory cream, and did it simultaneously. So the question is, if he did that, how many malchus would he get? You understand? Is it only one action, or is it five separate ones, you know, because he made five different sets of baldness in his hair, okay, by using this depilatory. So this is, I say, we'll come to in the Gemara. Okay. The Apal Gav, Teleka Elochadu Hasra, even though There is only one warning against it, but nevertheless, b'chayavin and le'chomesh, we have him liable to 5 cents. All right. At any rate, okay. How many payers are there? So it's shtayim mekan, right? But now we're talking about the beard. There are two on this side, right? And he says, chomesh payers heishul azokon. There are five different corners to the beard. Echad lamata min ha'ozen, one underneath the ear. In other words, here where the jaw joints over here, alright, this is one area. Makom shalechi atachton yotze, where the lower jaw starts out from over here, or mispore sham, and it's divided there into the various parts. The sham nikra peyo, and that is called a peyo. The chudo shalechi, at the sharp point or the high point of the cheek, shebolet lechutz, because it protrudes outwardly. Shesham matzchelas hazaken. That's where the beard begins. V'chol ma'a shalamala ad hatzida, and everything from that point on up to the temple, v'chlal pa'as harosh, that belongs to the head part. V'shtei hashibolos, and the two that sprout out over here, kol echod benhen l'sof halechi, down to the end of the cheek, okay? The nikra peyah, and that is the peyah. Now, of course, this is what the Rashi over here, actually the Ribban, as we learned last week, is saying over here. And then the achas milmato, and then there's one all the way at the bottom, seyor shebein hashibolotz, be'emsa hasanta, which is right in the middle of the chin, shelo azin, that in French they call menton. Menton is the French word for chin, okay? Menton. So this is the fifth point. Here, here, right, here, mm-hmm. Here, here, and over there. Okay. It would be technically here.
Two
of them are here, right? Two around over here,
and one
over here. These are the five. But this, as I say, there are others who dispute it and say that they have their own, they have a different geography for what the 5 points are. Okay. But this is his. Okay. This belongs to the head, he says. Right. The beard starts from under here. Okay? And this belongs to the head. So that this would be involved in Los Akifu.
Yeah,
and this would be involved in Los Ashkisu. Okay? Right. In other words, one we call rounding the head, if you take off the payas over here. And the other one would be marring the beard, if we do that. But as I said, the saving grace is the question about if you do not use a ta'ar for it, okay? But I saw something on television last night. A black football player. Everything is shaved over here, except from this point on, it's round. Sometimes you see, kids. No question. That is really low sakifu. There's no question. That is certainly, making a circle around the head.
Yeah.
And, there are no pears, no hair, no nothing over there. That was all shaved off, you see. Mm-hmm. So that would certainly be a violation. There's no question about that. What? Yeah, right, right. They take a bowl and they do it, or something like that. Okay, yeah. All right.
I used to have the Mohawk Indians. They had what they call the Mohawk.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Look kind of crazy.
Look like everybody else.
No. No. The Gemara that says you're allowed to look like anybody else in the city.
That's what he means. I know what he means. He means that if you go out,
if everybody is shaving.
If you look suspicious, or you look like somebody's going to, you're going to be the center of a rabbi.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe I'm saying it wrong. You can accommodate it, but you can't go too far.
Yeah. Well, I understand what you're driving at, but it's not a specific statement in the Gemara. No. No. But the various, once you start in to go, let's say into the Shulchan Aruch or something like that, Shilas and Chuvas particularly, I mean, because there people ask practical questions, you know, what should I do with this and this under these and these circumstances, you understand? So that's already a different story. All right, V'yeinu chayev asher tivlena b'tar, right, and he does not become liable to Malkus until he removes this hair with a knife, with a razor, as we said. Tana kama kamalo, so it says, this is what the first Tana said, Rabbi Eliezer poligalei, and Rabbi Eliezer is in disagreement because Rabbi Eliezer says that anything that you do, even with a tar, you know, that... I mean, even with a malakate or a hitne and so on, you are liable, even though, obviously, according to Chacham, it would be permissible to use these gadgets in order to do it, because it's not, strictly speaking, a straight knife. Okay? All right. Well, I think that we'll stop at this point tonight, and then next week we'll take a plunge on tomorrow itself. And, okay, so we'll meet them, Yom Tov, next Wednesday night, right after Mincha Maariv.
Okay.
And,
well, where are we? Is that where
we're going? All right, so we're still on Dav Chav.
Dav Chav.
Right, Amud Aleph, and we'll start from the Gemara.
Mm-hmm.
Next week. Right. And, you know, in other words, the discussion is going to be now about taking this Mishnah and...
Analyzing it.
Exactly. Okay.
Okay.
Tonight is August the
7th.
Okay. We are now on Dov Chav. Omid Aleph beginning with the Gemara. All right. As we mentioned at the end of last week's shiur, the Gemara at this point is going to analyze the Mishnah. However, again, I want to remind you that what were the different sukkim that we read last week in the Chumash, which speak about what we're doing over there, okay? So, we have, first of all, in Parsha Kedoshim, okay. Parsha Kedoshim, we read the following pasuk, right? It says, "Lo sakifu paas roshchem, v'lo sashchis eis paas tzekonecho," which we translated as, "You shall not literally make round the corner of your head." Only, of course, we have to say, since we have two corners to a head, so it would have to be translated as the corners of your head. "Nor are you allowed to mar or destroy the corner of your beard." Naturally, tonight we'll go into a little this and in greater detail. And then the next pasuk says, "Beseret lo nefesh," and literally a gash or a scratching for a dead person. "Lo sitnu b'tzarchem," you're not allowed to put it into your flesh, not allowed to make it in your flesh. And then the next one, "Achsovis kaka," which is dealt with subsequently, is going to deal with making tattoos, okay? And as we pointed out, in all probability, these were idolatrous practices, at least is the way the Rambam understood them, and therefore they were prohibited. So this is source number one. Source number two, as we saw, came in the following Sedra in Parsha Emor, where he speaks about the Kahanim and how they have to keep themselves in the state of Kedusha and not to be Metami. So what is one of the things that it says? It says, "Lo yikrachu korcho b'roshom," right? That they shall not literally make a baldness in their head. "Ufasikonom lo yigalechu," nor shall they shave the corner of their beards. "Uvibsorom lo yisvetu sarotis," right? And in their flesh they're not allowed to make any cutting. So far, so good. And then what was the third source? The third source happens to be the parsha we're going to be reading, the Shabbos, Parsha Re'eh, okay, where it says, "Bonim atem lo Hashem elokeichem," you are the children of the Lord your God, and because therefore we are Adam Kodosh, as the following pasuk says. So getting back to what this says, it says, "Lois is going to do," which means literally you're not allowed to cut yourselves, right? "Lois asimu korcho b'neinechem," nor are you to make a bald spot literally between your eyes, but of course between the eyes is a little difficult unless you really are overgrown over here. So we have to give a slightly different interpretation of Beinei Nechem. And of course the last word over there is lames, for a dead person. Okay? So that to sum up the three of them, we see that certain practices are prohibited, and these are practices now that the Mishnah deals with. One of them is, that is, one group of them is specifically directed to whom? To the Kohanim. But the others are not directed to the Kohanim, obviously. To whom are they directed? To everybody. All right? So, right, for the Yisrael, for the Levi, Yisrael, whoever, but anybody who's not a Kohen. Right, to call Yisrael, exactly. Okay? So, but still, the Gemara is going to ask this question. Okay? So the Gemara begins by saying, Tanu Rabbot. Okay? Now, rabbis taught us what? Pasuk, Lo Yikrechu. Which, of course, dealt, you know, this was in Parsha Emor. Okay? It says, Yochol Afilu Korach Arba Vachomesh Krichos Lo Yechai Vela Achas. Question is, if he made four or five bald spots all over his head, okay? Naturally, as we said before, as a sign of lamentation for the dead, if he did that, right? So, shall we say then that he should only be liable to one set of malkos for all of them, right? Of course, what would be the basis for saying that? The basis for that would be saying he's performing the same act, and so therefore he's only guilty of the violation of that one particular act. Okay? So, Talmud Lomar, this is why the Torah tells us, Korcha. Why does it repeat the word Korcha? It says, Lo Yikrechu Korcha Bereshim, right? The question is, why does it say, Lo Yikrechu Korcha? Could have said simply, Lo Yikrechu Bereshim. So why do they need the word Korcha? So the answer that they give over here is the Chayev al Kol Korcha v'Korcha Bereshim. Chayev al Kol Korcha v'Korcha. Okay? Period. Should be over there. Okay? If you have an annotated text, maybe, okay. The Gemara doesn't have periods of quotation marks and things like that. So you have to get the rhythm, really, of it in order to see, you know, where a period belongs and where, you know, it's still carrying over to the previous sentence, okay? So, what does the Torah tell us by using the word korcha? So the answer is, in order to tell us that you will be liable for each and every action of korcha, and therefore you would deserve a set of malkas for each and every time that you did. Okay, Ganspine. So far, so good. Now, why does the Torah say berosham? That's the next question. Literally in their head. So Matamud Loma, what does it tell us? So it tells, so the answer is Lafish and Amar, Lois is going to do, inasmuch as the Pasuk, the one that from Pasha Rei says you shall not cut yourself, right? And you are not to make a baldness literally between your eyes for a dead person. Yochel, shall we say that lo yehe chayov elo al ben hoynayim bilvad, that he would be liable to malchus only if he made it between his eyes, literally, right? Mm-hmm. So minayim l'rabbi is called harosh. How do we know that you have to include any spot in the head, anywhere, wherever it may be in the person's head, if he makes a baldness, you know, under these circumstances, then Talmud Loma, that's why the Torah says Beroshon Lerabois call Harosh, in order to add the entire head is subject to this. Okay. Then he says V'ainli Ela B'Kehadim. Maybe we should say that these restrictions apply only to Kohanim. Why? Sheribo Behen Akosim Nitzvah Siseros. Because in connection with the Kohanim, we have additional mitzvos that the Torah gave to them. As we know, for example, a Kohen, you know, has to, the Borech, right? He has to give a bracha to the people, okay? Or, as for example, a Kohen naturally is charged, you know, with performing, you know, the korbanos, you know, taking care of them, the korbanos, and everything else, you know, that they had to do in the Beis HaMikdash. As for example, let's say lighting the lamps, right? Or you know, let's say the incense, you know, haktorah and things like that, and so on and so forth. You know, they have a special job.
Showbread.
Right. showbread that they're in charge of, and so all these things. So therefore, let us say that they are the ones who have to keep a state of holiness, a special state of Kedusha, because the Torah gave them, so that therefore this applies to them only. No, the Yisrael Menayan, how do we know that any Israelite must not do these things? Ne'emar kan korcho, in one pasuk it says korcho, ve'ne'emar lahalan korcho, and another pasuk it also uses the same word korcho, right? So ma'ala halon chayev al kol korcho ve'korcho, the chayev al harosh kevein ho'inayim. So as we have already shown that in the case that we have first discussed, that he would be liable to Marcus for each and every act of baldness that he makes, and not only that, but he becomes liable to Marcus for any area in the head, just as it would be between the eyes. So afkan, so likewise here, we have to say chayav al kol korcho v'korcho, v'chayav al arosh kevein hu'inayim. That we say that he is liable, and in other words, if he is an Israelite, he's just as liable, right, for each and every action of baldness that he makes, and also any place on the head as between the eyes. Okay.
This seems to be always tied in with mourning for the dead.
Correct. This is what we're going to see. I mean, you might think that in general it applies, but we'll see when we turn the page that in reality, primarily the concern about the death.
Someone did it not for that purpose.
Right.
Would they be liable to Malkus?
No. Okay. But I'm leaving it for when we turn the page.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Anyway, we didn't turn the page yet.
Okay.
I just wanted to make a comment about Beinoi Naim, between the eyes. Okay. Literally, you would think, you know, the Bein Einayim means only over here. No, I don't know. I don't grow hair over here. I don't know how many other people grow hair over here, right? Not that common. Obviously, the Torah is more concerned, you know, as far as, you know, making bald. We're an area that's already bald. Now, that's not what they're talking about. So that, therefore, we really have to go back, you know, to what we say in the Shema.
Yeah.
What do we say in the Shema Yisrael, right? The Hoyu Letotafos. Beinecha, right? Which we translate very inadequately, and they shall be for frontlets, whatever frontlets are. Literally, between the eyes, right? But how do our Chachamim come and interpret what we mean by Beinecha? The answer is that you have to make sure that when you put on the tefillin shel rosh, that it is centered between the eyes. In other words, you know, over there. So either you do it by using your finger, right? Or else you take a mirror, the way a lot of yeshiva bachim do these days, that they take a mirror in order to make sure that the tefillin is being placed properly on the head.
And near the hairline.
Yes, okay. It has to be really just above, you know, where the hairline begins. Okay. However, Danny, have any comment to make about it?
Yeah, people should be very careful when they put on their tefillin.
Yes, right.
You shouldn't dip too low.
Right. Unfortunately, some people, you know, the ritzua, you know, the thumb is too loose, and once it's too loose, it's going to fall down, or something slide down, or something. And of course, they have the feeling right over here. While it may be Beinei Necha, but it's not really the proper place, because we have another one that says it should be on the spot where, if you have an infant has a soft spot over here in the head. This is the proper place to put the
feeling. No, actually,
okay.
It's the middle of the head.
Right. Of course, the question is, what happens if a guy is bald? How does he know where to put it? So the answer is, he has to remember where once upon a time this hairline was.
It's where the head starts going up.
Yeah.
In the form.
Okay, so this is Bein Hoinayim, okay? But as we see, it would apply to baldness any place on the head, because of what we just said. I mean, if he tore out hair here, or tore out hair here, or even in the back of his head if he tore out hair, in any case, if he was doing it al meis, then in that case, he was violating the law of the Torah, and he is liable to Marcus for that. Okay. All right, then it says, Ma'al halon al meis, from the second line from the bottom, right? And just as in the further case, that if he does it al meis, because it's written in the that, right? So Avkan Almeis. So we have to say that here too it is Almeis. In other words, that it applies not just, you know, where it said about that the Kohanim, like and so on and so forth, you know, where it says that these things are intimately tied in with mourning for their close relatives, the only ones for whom they are permitted to be mitami. In fact, it's a mitzvah for them to be mitami to the relatives, right? Father, mother, brother, sister, etc., etc. Okay? But the same thing would apply also then to the ordinary Israel, that he's not allowed to do it, but it's only in connection with Lomais.
Okay.
So we'll see in a second why they say that. Okay. All right. Now, Hani Dalad Vehe Krichos He Chidome. Question is, if he makes four or five bald spots, how are we to interpret the fact that he deserves makis for them, right? For each and every one of them.
Why didn't he say four or five?
Because it could apply to 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It makes no difference.
Right.
Okay. For some reason or other, they like to say Dalad Vehe. Okay.
They're trying to get multiple spots.
Yes. So, they give the example of five, okay? We'll see in a second why Dafka five, but as we see, it doesn't have to be Dafka five. It could be any amount, okay? Because even for one, he is liable. So if he does two,
he's liable
for two. He would be liable for two, for three, and so on. So Dalad Vehe, okay? Maybe Dalad Vehe, they're using the expression over here partly because we have a Dalad Vehe in connection with something else in the Torah. Do you remember what it might be about the Dalad Vehe?
Feeling.
Huh?
Stealing
what? Normally, if you steal something, right, then it's Shnayim Yishalim, right?
Yeah, and then,
yeah. But correct. I mean, if it's a sheep.
Five, four times.
Yeah, okay.
It's
Abba Tzayin, right. Chamisha Bokor, Tachas Hashor, right? The Arba Tzon, Tachas Hashor, Abba Tzayin, Tachas Hashor. Okay. I'll have to look it up again. But anyway, this is the general idea. Okay. Sometimes I'm permitted to slip a little bit, but that's the idea I got. Okay. Yeah, Chamisha Bokor, Yishalim Tachas Hashor, the Arba Tachas Hasen, that's what it says. Okay. All right. So, the Gemara I'm referring to this, you know, when it talks about this Tashlume Kefel, right? In other words, where the penalty is that you pay twice the amount, right? And then, of course, you have Tashlume Dalad Behe, as the case that we cited. So, maybe it's my own chiddush, I don't know. I don't know whether it's valid or not, but you know, sometimes there is a tendency in the language of the Gemara that you use certain expressions that if you're so used to using the expression in situation A, you sort of have a carryover into situation B. This is what is known as shigras haloshon. Of course, I'm talking Ashkenazi. But shigras means that you simply are used to this expression, so you're automatically using, the same expression that we'd use. Okay. At any rate, we'll see why five in a minute. Okay.
Four or five are hairs?
Huh?
These are individual hairs?
No. So far, we are talking about tearing.
Hairs.
You're making korcha. Korcha here, korcha there, korcha
there.
Maybe
one hair.
No, both.
Well,
underneath
let's
that
hold
hair,
it.
They,
Let's hold it. Okay. Savlonis. Little patience. Okay. Let's turn the page first. However, don't turn the page before we do the last line. Okay. So it says, hey, he wants to know. All right. The last line says, remember again, Hani Dalabah, hey, Kriches, these four or five bald spots, hey, Chidome. And what circumstance is it? The reason why, I mean, he mentions it over here is because what did the Mishnah say? Mishnah said, you know, that makes no difference, you know, that, you know, it says, okay, it said before, Sorat Srita Achas al Chamisha Mesev, right? Or Chamish Srita al Mesechot Chayva Kol Achas V'Yachas, right? Okay, so in other words, the idea being that if we sort of equate one with the other, then in that particular case, how do we come to it, you know, that, you know, how many sets of malchus is he going to get? Okay, how does he do it that he does a multiple business? Okay? Ilaymor, if we say bezeh acharzeh, that he did it one after another, in other words, he did this, and then he did this, and did another one, and so on and so forth, right?
Continuous.
Okay, yeah. Uvachamesh has royce, and not only that, but every time that he did it, they said, hey, don't do it. And he went and he did it again. And they say, hey, you're not allowed to do it. He went and he did it again. So, all right? So that five times he does one, don't tear your hair out, don't make a bald spot. And each time he did it. Now, obviously, then how many sets of malchus should he be getting?
Five.
Makes no difference. That's pshita. That's obvious, right? That this is what he should be getting. Now we turn the page. Elo dechado hasro mimechayev. But let's say that he was given only one warning, and he did it five times, right? So the question is, obviously, is he going to be punished with five sets of malchus, even if he only got only one warning? And at this particular point, they draw a parallel to the case of the Nazir. What about the Nazir?
This is a question.
Yeah, huh?
This is a question.
It's a question, correct. But they're going to compare the two to see whether one is relevant to the other one or not. Okay? The question is, you know, B'chada Hasro mi B'chayev, right? Would he be...
I read it, Elo B'chada Hasro is a Terence.
No. That's not the way we have to understand it. Listen, you're entitled to your point of view. By all means, if we don't ask, we won't know, okay? But I don't think that this is really the flow of the language or the flow of the argument in the Gemara, okay? What the Gemara is saying, okay, is, okay, Elabachada Hasro mi Bechayev. Would he be liable to five sets of malchus, right? If he was only given warning once?
That's the way it's...
I mean, obviously, the previous page said, you know, we can understand that he did a bizarre chazer, and each time they said, no, 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 and he said, yes, 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 okay? And he did it, Afzalachas, okay? Then in that particular case, he's entitled to five sets of malchus. But why should he be entitled to be at the five sets of malchus of the only God, one hasra? Is this what the case is going to be? And now we draw, as I said, a parallel to the case of the Nazir to see whether that enlightens us in any way. The Hotnan, we have a Mishnah, and the Mishnah is Nazir also. It's quoted in Kedushin as well. All right. It says, Nazir shehoya shesa yayin kol hayom, that if a Nazir
drank
wine all day long, he's only liable to one set of malchus, literally, for drinking the wine, right? And he's only liable to the one set of malchus for the entire thing. Okay. So, omruloi, if they said to the nazir. But still quoting from the Nozer, okay? If they said to the Nozer, Al Tishte, don't drink, in other words, they're saying to him time and again, don't drink wine, the Hushoise, and he drinks wine in spite of the fact that he's given these individual warnings. So Chayav al kol achas v'achas, then there's no question that he is liable for each and every violation of his drinking wine. So, whereas the Mishnah in Nozir began by saying that if he drank wine all day long, but only with how many sets of hasra? Only one, right? What they said to him, you're not allowed to drink wine, and he went and he did it. So, no matter how many times he did it, we say he's only liable to one set of malchus. Whereas, if each and every time that he drank, they warned him and said, don't drink, and he violated it, in that case, he deserves malchus for each and every violation, right? So that if we were to take this as a parallel
to the
case of the korcha, then what do we have to say? That if he had multiple korchas but with only
one
warning, then in that case he should only get one set of malchus. Whereas each and every time, as we said before on the opposite page, you know, if they said to him, don't, and he did it, don't, and he did it, then in that case he would get malchus for each and every time, right? This would be the normal situation. So, if this is what we say, right? Then in that particular case, we would have to say then that if there's only one hasra, then he should get only one set of malchus,
right,
even though he may have put, four or five bald spots on his head. Okay? So in that case, how do we get a case? This is the question. How would we get a case where he would only violate one hasra and at the same time get five sets of malchus? Okay? This is the question. So they give an interesting answer. They says, Leitzricha, we need that particular teaching in order to teach us the following case. What? The Soch Chomesh Esbeis of Nasho, Yosvinhu Befas Achas, the Hevi Lehaswa Lechol Chada Vechada. Okay, let me translate. All right. Says, we need it for a person who is Soch. Soch, if you remember, means literally he smears oil, right?
No. The
pillatory. Yeah, what we call it, well, we didn't get to the pillatory yet. Okay. But anyway, he smears, an ointment, okay? With his five fingers, takes his five fingers and puts it into Nasha. And the question is, what is Nasha? Normally, if I would see this word Nasha, I would read it as what? As women.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the normal translation of the word. You know, as for example, we speak about Mibay Nosha, right? What is Mibay Nosha? It means literally, woman's household or something like that, okay? So, but this is not what it means over here, okay? So that's why I said Nasha instead of Nosha. I really don't know whether the word is to be written with a comet or a patach or what. That we'll have to leave for the great
that's
Aramaic.
Right. That's
what's that?
What are they saying?
How do they what pintalach do they have in the
Nosha
word?
Nosha.
Huh? Nosha they put down.
Nosha.
Nosha. With two comments.
Yeah.
All right. So that's exactly the same as when we say Bay Nosha. No question about it.
Yeah.
But take a look at the Rashi, which we find just you see where it says Torah Or over there on the side, and you go down one line, it says Nosha, says Perush, he says the meaning of this is Sam, literally it means a poison, but it doesn't really mean necessarily a poison. Sam is any kind of a medication.
Mm-hmm.
This is really what it means, okay? Today, of course, they use it also, you know, kachlcha samim, right? So they use it, I'm sorry to say, for drugs also.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, at any rate, the translation of the word nasha, it says, is sam. It's a drug or an ointment, if you wish, shemashir is a seyor, which causes the hair to fall out. Mashir is in the word nosher, falls, okay? Drops, falls, okay? Shemashir is a seyor, causes the hair to fall out. V'hasoch bimenu, eino tzameach seyor bugufo. And if a person uses it, he smears it on a place on his body, then that is not going to, that there will no longer grow any hair over there. So this is why they translated probably over there like a depilatory, right? And the Yosvinhu says Rashi Bevasachas, in other words, at the same time he put it where? Behemakomos, five places simultaneously. The Habaluhu Hei Krichos. In other words, what does it cause? It causes five
bald spots.
Okay, that's the reason why they chose five over here. Understand? Because with your five fingers, you see, they're taking the case. If he did it four, it could have been four. But obviously, he did with all five fingers over here. Covid, right? He did this. So, my cause is the chayla hasro a high etzba to pay my high. Okay? So, Rashi asks a good question over here. He says, why should you imagine that the Hasra only falls on one finger more than on any other finger? In other words, since the Hasra obviously is going to fall simultaneously on each and every finger, so that therefore, then he's creating what? Five different bald areas simultaneously. The Hasra Sofik Lemechshiva. Now, here we cannot consider the Hasra Sofik. We had earlier the problem of Hasra Sofik. In other words, with the Hasra, the warning that is given is not really definite, it's only implied. Okay? And if you remember, the question is, can we give Malkus if it is only Hasra Sofik instead of being spelled out? Understand? And we saw that most of the authorities believe that you cannot for Hasra Sofik. Yeah, there's one opinion that says yes, and you always find somebody who is stricter than others and will say yes, but that's not the accepted opinion. Expect that a Hasra has to be really spelled out specifically. Okay. And you can't give Malkus otherwise. Okay. But, says Rashi, here it's not a case of Hasra Sofik. Why? Hasra kulha etzpoe shadya or mantra, right? Because the Hasra really rests on each and every one of the fingers. Will alter Mizbori lo, and immediately it becomes clear unto him im cheshesh lahasra, so alo, whether the person is really paying attention to the Hasra which was given to him not to do it or not. Okay? Alright.
How does this answer the question?
How does it answer the question? Then we have to say we're looking for a case. Alright. We posited two different cases so far. Okay? Case number one. They said they don't, and he went and he did it, right? So what do we say? So we said, pshita, it's obvious that in that particular case, for each and every action of korcha that he performs, he deserves malchus. And he went ahead and he did it five different times. They said they don't, and he went and he did it, right? So what do we say? So we said, pshita, it's obvious that in that particular case, for each and every action of korcha that he performs, he deserves malchus, because he's been warned each and every time. Okay, so that's case number one. Case number two is the one that we had on the top over here, namely, if they only gave him one hasbar, and he went ahead and he did it five different times, okay, would he be liable with only one set of hasbar to five malchus, let's say, or should he only get one malchus? For this, they drew the parallel to the case of the nazir, where they said that in the case of the nazir, if he only had one hasra and they drank wine all day long, then in that particular case, he would only get one set of malchus for it. Whereas, if each and every time they said to him, don't drink, don't drink, and he went and he drank anyway, so in that case, he would get malchus for each and every set of it. All right, so that's the parallel that we drew over here.
Would be then,
right, so the rule,
each hasra you get a malchus.
Yeah, for each one that you get hasra, right. But if you only had one hasra, then in that case, right, we would say that you would only get one set of malchus. But yet, the Mishnah seems to imply that there is a case where you get five even if you only did one action, right? So how could it be? So this is why they come up with this teretz, that it's possible, you know, that if you dip your fingers into this depilatory cream and simultaneously you made five different places, you know, bald in your head, then in that case you deserve five sets. Why? Even though you only got one hasra? But the answer is, because how do I know which finger was told don't do it? It applies to anything. Why should we say one finger is better than another or something like that? You understand?
Yeah, it's only going to be on the one belt. You only get one set of markets per hasra. So you don't know which one, but why do you say both on all five?
No, but they still want to figure out where is it possible to have five sets of markets for one hasra. That's case number three, right?
The way I know what the Gemara wants to do. The question is, how did it get there?
How did it get there?
I don't know which finger, but it's only one finger.
No. You put five. We said, here is a jar.
One finger.
Here is a depilatory cream, okay? Right. I put my five fingers into it. I stick them on my head. And in every place where I put my head with this depilatory cream, I'm automatically causing a bald spot.
That's what's going on which finger?
That's just the point that Rashi is making.
You don't know which finger.
Say. We don't know which finger,
only,
so therefore it applies to all of them.
But it's only one finger, though.
No, it applies to all of them.
So the one hasra applies to all five.
And he says that it's not even considered hasra sofik in this case, because it would apply to each and every one. So since you're doing five...
Well, why not just say that the hasra applies to all five fingers? Rashi seems to imply in the beginning it only applies to one, we don't know which one.
Yeah, so... But as I said, we're still looking for a case where with only one hasra you're going to get five malchus. So here's a case. This is how we can do it. Because otherwise it's going to be bezeh achar zeh, right? The average person is going to do what? Do here, do there, whatever it may be, right? But he's doing it zeh achar zeh. And so it depends whether in zeh achar zeh were they giving him hasra for each and every action or not. If they only gave him one hasra and then he did his zeh achar zeh, then it would be like the case of the nausea drinking wine. So, at least it's the way I understand it. I hope I got it right. Okay.
Stop it.
Right. So now the next question that they ask is, "V'kamo shiur korcha?" Now,
what is the measure? I mean, in other words, how much do you have to remove? That's the next slide over there. Yeah, we're on line, let's see, 3, 6, 7, okay? Yeah, right, the Kamashir Korcha is line 7.
Okay.
Says, what would be the measure of boldness? In other words, how much would be considered like a minimum amount, okay, in order to be liable for malchus? So, for this, we're going to see that there are differences of opinion. Opinion number one that's quoted over here is Rav Huna. Rav Huna, Mary says, "Kedei sheyeroe meroshei." If you pull out enough so that the hair, the bare skin of the hair, can be seen over there, then that is making a korcha, and for that you would be liable. But they didn't say how many hairs are involved. He's talking only about if you can create an area where there's going to be a bald spot visible, then in that particular case, that's the shear, okay? The minimum shear.
Wouldn't it be how you part your hair? I mean, if you part it to the other side, maybe you could see. If you part it to the other side, you won't be able to see.
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. But I think that the answer would be, no matter whether you parted the hair or you didn't part your hair, if you do enough so that when you get finished doing it,
sure,
you can see the skin over there, right?
If then you
in that
expose
case,
the spot from which the hair is taken,
right,
you will see a bald spot in your subject to malchus.
Right.
We
correct.
Open up about that this applies to morning.
Yes, yes. We didn't. I've said so, but the Gemara didn't get to it yet.
We're going
to
get to that. All
yes.
Right, but point,
because, I mean, in the Torah, too, the implication seems to be the morning. Yeah.
Morning,
yeah.
And then he does something because of his morning.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The depth of his morning, and
right,
then he gets marked for that.
Right. Okay.
He's
Sam, I'll tell you, you're asking a very good question.
Right,
this
we'll
is already a psychological question.
Yeah.
I would say as follows. If the man were really so bereft of his senses because of the great emotional upheaval that's involved over there, then in that case, it would not apply. We're talking where he's doing it because he really wants to follow what the goyim were doing in those days. Okay? What did the goyim do? So they made a bald spot. They tore hair out, okay?
Okay. It was a pagan practice.
Correct, correct. Although I have to tell you, I remember in Yiddish, so rice in the whore or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if you ever heard the expression.
Yeah.
You did something bad and your mother says, "I feel so rice in the whore," something like that. This is the same idea, you see. Except that mother didn't mean it to perform an idolatrous action. But in those days, if you were doing it, you were imitating something that the goyim were doing, you see. And that is the reason why it is prohibited. Okay, right. Okay, all right. So, yeah, now, this is opinion number one of Rav Huna, right? Kadesha and Mirosha. Rabbi Yochanan, he comes along with a different opinion. Rabbi Yochanan, he says, Bishum Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshimon, he says that it is, there's a different reading over there, Rabbi Eliezer ben Shamor, all right. But he says, at any rate, Kegris. Now, what is a gris? Gris in Yiddish, they used to translate groipen. A groipen. Right?
Groypen.
Yeah, so what's a groypen? You go into the store and you buy this wolf's kasha.
Oh.
And each an individual grain is considered a groypen.
Okay.
However, others, they figure that's too small. So that's why some translate the word gris as being a bean.
Like grits?
Yeah, related to the word grits, examining. Exactly. No, like how many grits?
Right.
Down south, right. Okay.
Okay.
So he says it's the size of a bean. Of course, when it comes to beans, I was taking a look in Food Mart today where they have dry beans, and believe me, you have them like this, you have them like this, you have, you know, you have beans of different sizes. And it makes a difference. I mean, is it a very small, what they would call like a cranberry bean, a little black bean, or is it the size, let's say, of a lima bean or something like that? That's not discussed. Or like, in, let's say, like a chickpea or something like that. They're all different sizes, okay? But since we're talking already about a shear, obviously, we would have to say like the smallest bean, okay? The size of the smallest type of bean that you have. Right. All right. Kitanoi. So now they say, are we to say that this is similar to an argument, to a machloikis of the Tanoim? In other words, the earlier generation of the Chachomim, Kama Shiur Korcha, where one of them asked the question, what would be the Shiur, you know, of Korcha? And the answer number one is Kegrit, in other words, like a bean. Yeah. But we have Acher Momrim. Another opinion given by others is that Kedesh Yoreh Meloshe, where so that skin can appear from its head, in other words, any size once that they get that. So, Omer Rabbi Yehuda Bar Chaviva, he says, Ligibot Losa Tanoi, says, in reality, there are three differences of opinion, not just the two that we mentioned, namely, one is like a gris, and the other one is any spot that becomes visible, right? But there are really three of them, he says. Chad Oimer Kegris. One authority says that it's the size of the bean, as we said, okay? Chad Oimer Kedeshe Meroshe. The other one says, we're big enough so that you can see skin underneath, right? From where the hair was torn out. Chad Oimer. And another one says, Kishte Sares. If you pulled out only two hairs, it's enough already. It would be a violation. So that's the third opinion. And then it says in the Eko Demapik Tesaris, Ma'ayo Bichadosha. He says, there are those who say, with the last one, take out the business of the Tesaros, but instead say that if you create a boldness which is the sign, which is the size of an Adosha. Adosha is a lentil. Needless to say, it's a bigger measure than the other. In other words, it would require a larger area if this would be the opinion, okay? The Simonoch, and what is the Simon? Pardon me?
Is it
barley? No, Adosha always translate as lentils.
Lentil.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Lechem nezid Adoshim. Right. Yeah. Yeah, we normally say it's lentil soup. Yeah. You know, that Yankev Avinu made for Esav, you know. Esav HaRosha. He gave him bread and lentils, right?
And got it before.
And of course, I mean, this is the reason why some say that this is also, you know, that it's a machal avelim, you know. Mm. Some say, you know, that a hard-boiled egg is a machal avelim. Others say that, you know, nizid adoshim is also machal avelim.
Why?
Why? Because there were those who say that Abraham Avinu passed away that day.
Oh.
So, you know, Yitzhak was the novel. Okay, the simonoch, and we have a simon for this, that, you know, the machlokes is between either a bean or an adosha, in that in the Torah we speak about baheres umichyas bosa, you know, among the signs of leprosy. Okay, if you have a white spot and then there is like a fleshy part that's right in the middle, looks like it's erupting, it's alive, it's pussy, whatever it is, then in that case becomes. But what is the shear? So they gave a shear at that time also. The shear that they gave is that the Bahiris has to be the size of Kegris, like a gris, right? Umichya,
yeah.
What does that have to be? It has to be Bichsha Adosha. Okay. So they're simply quoting this in order to show that they have another case, you know, where the gris and the adosha are two different measures. Okay. Tana. Another thing that we've learned. It's Gemara and Shabbos. Okay? It says, Anoitel Malay Pi Hazug B'Shabbos Chayav. It says that if a person takes as much as he can within one cutting of a scissor, Zug over here is like Zug Mesparayim, is really what he means, okay? Of course, Zug normally means a pair, but over here it means sort of like, you know, a pair of scissors, okay? All right, so, yeah, so he says, if you take a scissors full of hair on Shabbos, in other words, the implication being, of course, that you don't take it, but you actually, you cut it, right?
Mm.
So, you're liable, right? Liable, of course, to what? Not necessarily to Malkus, you'd be liable to a Chappas in this particular case, if you did it unwittingly, because you were violating one of the Asurim of Shabbos. V'chamo malei pi hazug, and how much do we consider, you know, the taking of
eight scissors. How much will it hold? So Amar Rav Yehuda, shtayim. So Rav Yehuda said it means two hairs, right? Didn't we learn that the korcho shtayim, that for korcho it should be two? So Amor, so he said, yeah, you know what? Say therefore, or learn, in other words, v'chein lekorcho shtayim, that just as for Shabbos, if you cut two hairs with a scissor, you are liable. So likewise, if you make, if you take out two hairs and create baldness as a result of it, so you're also liable on that account. Right. Tanya Nami Hochi. We likewise learned a similar teaching that says, Hanoitil Malay Pi Hazug Bishabos Chayav. That if a person, you know, takes as much as a scissors cut on Shabbos, then he is liable. V'cham Malay Pi Hazug Shtayim. Okay? And how do we know how much it means? It means two hairs. Rabbi Eliezer, he has a different opinion. He says, Rabbi Eliezer, Omer Achas. He says that even if you cut out one hair on Shabbos, okay? Umoidim Chachomim, Rabbi Eliezer. So the Chachomim are in agreement with Rabbi Eliezer when Bimelakeit Levonis Metoy Shechores. If he sees there is a white hair among the black hair, and he goes and he pulls out, or he cuts out the white hair from among the black ones, then he is liable, even for that one hair. Otherwise, they would say at least two hair, right? But why over here? Because here it's for a different reason. It's not just a question, let's say, of Shabbos, or it's not just a question of Korcha, but here there's a different inyan which is involved. Okay, and we'll see in a second what is the new inyan, right? Shehu Chayev, right? He's liable. The Dover Zay says this is true. Afila Bechol Osir, right? This is prohibited on the weekday, even as it is on Shabbos. He's violating an action by pulling out that white hair from among the others. Why? Mishum Shenemar, because there's a pasuk that says Lo Yilbash Gevel Simlas Isha, that a man is not allowed to put on the garment of a woman. In other words, if a man does something that for women is permitted, women are permitted to look beautiful, and therefore if they feel like dyeing the hair, okay, or if they spot a silver hair, you know, among the gold or among the black, whatever it may be, and they decide to take it out, okay, because a woman is permitted to look as beautiful to her husband as she can. Okay?
If she's married.
Yeah, of course I'm talking about married. Okay. Obviously a young girl doesn't have to worry about it. She doesn't have silver hair yet. Okay. But she's permitted to do it. Okay? Whereas if a man does it, he is doing an action which is permitted to women, but a man is not supposed to do that. Okay?
So are you, does it imply that, that any action that a woman does, the man is not allowed to do?
No, not necessarily. But in this case, you know, to look pretty or to look beautiful, you understand? After all, why would a man do it? Because he wants to look, you know, that he wants to look 20 years younger than he is or something like that. You understand? And in those days, I don't know, I guess Grecian formula had not yet been invented. So that therefore... okay, this is it. I'll tell you, it's a similar business with shaving under the armpits and so on. The man is expected not to shave underneath the armpits, okay? Doesn't say so specifically, but it's for the same idea. Why? Because he's expected, you know, a woman is permitted to do it. That's all, a woman is permitted to do it. So, again, for the same reason, because a woman wants to look beautiful, this is her nature, and the Torah permits her to look beautiful. Okay.
And she's a religious woman who looks under her armpits.
No. Maybe her husband does. So I know.
Then it's too late anyway. So the difference is away.
But at any rate, I mean, we understand. And this is the reason why. Okay?
Looks that, like it's in the area of vanity.
Yeah, correct, correct. Right. And, what did Shakespeare say? Vanity. Thy name is woman. Right? Anybody remember that from Shakespeare?
I'm all hot to talk. So that therefore, this is an act of vanity. Okay. Now I said when we turned the page, okay, I see that it's a little bit late already.
We got a salad.
Yes, excuse me, yes. Yeah, you want to know whether that's baldness?
No,
Borei on Shabbos.
Oh, Borei on Shabbos.
Hey, that's a new issue that I never thought of. But they stress the fact that you see over here that this is prohibited even on a weekday, not just on Shabbos. So that the basic prohibition over here is not because of Shabbos, but it is because of that. But of course, I mean, the other one where it said, you know, Amalakit Shtei Saros, there his motivation is not the fact that he sees a white hair and he wants to remove it. The motivation there is the fact that simply he wants to create korcha. So that's a different situation. Okay? All right, so I think we shall stop at this point. Baruch Hashem, we are now on the base of Chav, and we are moving on. You know, at the present rate, I think maybe in about 5, 6, 7 weeks or something like that, we should be able to make a seum on the Gemara.
Right.
But we're not there yet, but as you can see, there are 24 Dapim over here, and we're already on the second side of Lof Chav.
Right.
Of course, in between, you know, we'll have Yom Tov and so on, but still, I don't see any reason. Since Rosh Hashanah and Sukkot and so on, you know, so Sukkot, I always go away. Oy vey, oy vey. Oy vey. I'll have to repeat myself all over again. Pasuk in the Torah says, "Velo sakifu pe'as roshchem," which means that you are not allowed to round the corner of your head. Pa'as, which is a singular word, but obviously our head has more than one corner, so therefore it's better to translate it. The English translation puts it, namely, the corners of your head. And because the Gemara also says there are two corners, okay? So we have to find out, you know, where are the corners situated. Okay. So that's what the Gemara wants to ask. It says, Tan Rabbanan, Pa'as Rosho, what is the meaning of Pa'as Rosho? Namely, the corner of his head. It means Sof Rosho, where the end of his head is. So the Ezehu Sof Rosho, so what is the end of the head? So he says, Zeh ha-mashvet sedov la'acharei ozno ulfadachto. All right. This means somebody who takes and he makes exactly equal. Mashve, you know, from the word shaveh, which means equal. All right. He equals out, okay, sedov, that's what we call the brows, okay, le'acharei ozno, to the area behind his ears. In other words, it makes it all one fell swoop over there. Ulefadachto, and also including his forehead. Okay? So in other words, if he shaves off all this area over here, then automatically he is guilty of the makif pas rosho. Okay? Or hakofas pas rosho, whatever you want to call it. Okay? So this is the explanation. Toni Tano Kamedo Rav Chisda. So a certain Tano taught in the presence of Rav Chisda, and he taught the following. He said, Echod Hamakiv, the Echod Hanikov, like it. It makes no difference whether the person is actually doing the rounding of the head, in other words, he's doing it physically, or if it is being done to him. In other words, literally, the implication would be that he's sitting passively by, right?
The barber is doing it.
Yeah, the barber is doing it, but nevertheless, he's equally guilty together with the person who's actually doing the rounding out of the head. Okay? And naturally, what should the punishment be?
Malchus.
Like, you should get Malchus for that.
Should
okay?
Should the guy who's doing it also get Malchus?
Yeah, obviously. The person who is doing it and the person to whom it is being done without any protest.
Both of them.
Yeah, he didn't protest. He sat by quietly and he let it happen to him. This is, I say, according to this Tana in the presence of Rav Chisda. We'll see that there's a slight dispute about this, okay? What is the dispute?
Omale. So he said to him, in other words, the implication is that the Rav Chisda said to the person, you know, who quoted this particular halacha in his presence, he said, tell me, man de achel tamre ba bilo lokem. He says, if a person is to eat dates out of a sieve, so he gets malchus. Question is, what exactly is he saying? So we have to understand that what he's actually saying right now is, well, why don't we take a look at the Rashi for a couple of moments, okay?
Yeah.
All right. We'll go back again to Rashi, which is right just about opposite it,
yeah.
Okay, where it says, V'ezehu sofroshu. You see that? In the Rashi?
Mm-hmm. Say it again.
On the line that we are right
yeah,
now.
Right.
Okay. Go down about a line or two further in the Rashi to see V'ezehu sofroshu.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah, right.
All right. All right. So, Rashi is trying to explain what we just read previously. Namely, he says, V'ezehu inyan yehe makif sofroshu. Says, tell me, in which way should he be literally rounding, you know, the end of the head so that he should be liable for violation of the command which says you shall not round the head,
oh,
right?
Yeah, right?
So he says, he explained it, remember the Gemara, by saying, Hamashvet Sidov Achorei Ozlon Fadachto. In other words, somebody who makes an equal line, so to speak, between the tzidov, as we say, that I translated as temples, because that's the way we read it last week in the Rashi, okay? Where he uses the word temple, if you remember. It says Rashi, you know. Gives me a chance to practice my old French. Occasionally I come across a word I don't recognize, but occasionally, fairly often I do understand some of these words, okay? So, at any rate, he used the word temple for tzidor, okay? And then he used the word front, which means forehead, you know, it's like the English word front, so to speak, okay? For the padachs, okay? So Rashi says, he makes equal the temples and the area behind his ears, right, and his forehead. Okay, it says acharei ozno. He says the truth of the matter is that behind his ear ain't say or clue. There's no hair at all.
No hair.
Okay. V'chach b'mitzo. Likewise on his forehead, ain't say or clue.
Right.
There is no hair at all either. Avol b'tzidov shebe'emza. But over here in this area between the ear, right, and between this forehead, there is hair. Yesh seir, it says, okay? V'yimhu mashve v'notil kol asir shem tzidov. So if he takes all of the hair that's in this particular area away, so lomarato achareo es no fadachto, then you apply the teaching, which means that behind his ear and his brow, this is the one who rounds out the sof harosh. In other words, so that at this particular point, apparently the sof harosh refers to the areas over here.
Wow.
But it could also be over here. The point is that the entire area around over here is being made equal because he's getting this butch haircut, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Only it's not a butch haircut either. It's like, as I told you, I've seen these schwarzes, you know, they go around with the hair only on top. There's a little fringe over here and everything else has been shaved off. So this is probably the closest that we can get a description of Hamakif. I do have to tell you that, needless to say, those who are very, very from are not going to shave off this area over here. They're going to leave payas and everything else because they don't want to. I mean, this is why. Why do they raise payas? They're doing it because they don't want to violate in any way, whatever, you know, the lo sakif upas washka. So that, therefore, by not touching any hair in this area, then that way they fulfill it. Now, some people have payas going down this, but a lot of people, you know, if you've seen, I've seen in my own family, you know, my next generation is firmer than I am, so to speak. So that they grow pay us over here, and then, you know, they'll put it in the, you know, behind the ears and so on.
But this is supposed to be only a case of mourning.
has nothing to do with their daily life.
Very good. You ask a very excellent question.
So why do they go to that extreme?
Okay, why do they go to that extreme?
Because they're not in mourning, unless they are in mourning.
You know, you ask a very pertinent question. To that I have no answer, except to say that for some people, they're so fearful of trespassing, chas v'sholem, even the lightest commandment and so on, that they take a strict view, not an easy view. As I told you when we first came across the Mishnah, that the Mishnah had an escape clause, right? And what was the escape clause? That if you do it with a ta'ar, right? So that is no good. But if you would use some other implement in order to do it, so it would not be a violation, okay? Now, of course, we're going to see tonight that not everybody is in agreement with that point of view, that there are opinions that say that if you do it, you know, with some other incidents, we saw, you know, like the malake or a hitni. Remember, we translated the word malake, at least I did, as a tweezers,
right?
Because that's the most probable translation of it. And the other one, the rehitni, is some sort of a plane-like, chisel-like, some kind of thing that I guess is sharp enough, you know, that they could do it. But it's still, it's not exactly the same as a razor blade, you see. So that was the difference. Or, you know, one of these long razors that the barbers use, you know. So,
huh?
Straight razor, right.
What if they use the depilatory?
The depilatory is, I told you, that's already a different story, okay? I told you that according to the Chassam Sofer, using a depilatory in order to shave would be permissible, okay? So that's the reason why when people started to shave and they wanted to do it in accordance with the law, so they used these depilatory powders until the day that the electric razor came along. The electric razor represented a big revolution as far as Orthodox Jews who want to shave is concerned, because, you know, the feeling of most the authorities is that it is permissible, even though, again, I told you that there are machbirim who say that even with a safe, with an electric razor, it's also prohibited. So you're going to find, you know, unfortunately or fortunately or what, but you'll always have differences of opinion about certain halachas. Let you have your machmirim, you know, those who are very, very strict in what they say, and those who are mekilim, you know, those who are, you know, they look for literally the easy way out, but I'm not saying it necessarily in a disparaging way.
But there's always a middle
because
point.
They want to observe.
The middle
way. But the point is, if they want to observe and they feel that there is a way to do it legally, you know, without infringing upon the principles of the Torah, then in that case, you know, that should be done. You see. So this is the disparity that we have.
Thing
yes.
Is, what situation calls for a makos, right? And yet the severity of the punishment doesn't vary. As far as I gather.
Oh yeah, the severity is very sure. I mean, in one case you get only one set of malchus, another case you might be liable to two sets, three sets, four sets, five sets.
Well, the original call for how many lashes?
The original, as I said, called for 39 lashes.
Correct, 39.
39, right.
That's a severe, you know.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
What we're talking here, you know, it's surprising that they bring into the picture of punishment and severe.
Right, okay.
So they regard the, you shouldn't do this.
Right, correct. Okay, but again, I have to repeat. We learn that malchus are given only under certain stringent rules. Stringent rule number one is that the person has to be warned.
Right.
That what he is doing is liable to this punishment of malchus. It's a violation of the Torah and he's liable to it. If he doesn't know that, you know, he has not received this warning, then in that particular case he cannot get malchus, you see. So that's a very important thing. And now we'll also come to the other thing, and that is that malchus will not be given for a lav shein bo maaser. In other words, if you violate a negative commandment, first of all, for a positive commandment you don't get malchus, okay, if you violate. I mean, what would happen, for example, Let's say we all know that there is commandments, right? Let's say the Korban Pesach, okay? You have to eat Korban Pesach the night of Pesach, okay? What would happen if a person refuses to eat Korban Pesach? What would happen? So I'll tell you what. He wouldn't get Malkus. He'd get Chorus. Get Chorus. The Rebbeinu Shalom would take care of him, okay? But he would not get Malkus for that, because that's an affirmative commandment. You don't get Malkus for violation of affirmative commandment. So that's another thing. Then you don't get Malkus. Remember, normally Malkus is given only for violation of a negative commandment. If the Torah says thou shalt not do this or this, and you violate it deliberately, and even though you've been warned not to, and still you go ahead and you do it deliberately, then in that case you're liable to Malkus, okay? But what if you don't do any physical action, as we said, lav she'ein bo ma'aseh? Then in that case, do you get Malkus or not? Well, the answer is, according to most authorities, no. Yeah, there is a minority of one who says yes. But the minority of one, you know, is outweighed by all the others who say that you don't get Malkus, okay? But this is going to come up right now. Okay. All right, let's finish this Rashi, first of all. Now he says the Ochel Tamre Bar Bila. Remember, we said he said to him, the guy, he says, eats dates, okay, in a sieve. Does he get Malkus for that? Right? You're going to give Malkus. He says Ochel Tamre Bichvora. Kvora, he says, is a sieve. All right. And Arbila apparently is the Aramaic word for the Hebrew word kibara, which means a sieve. So, Yehei Loke, is he to get Malkus? Bismiya, Bismiya means question mark. In other words, he's asking me, you mean to tell me that a person who eats is going to get question mark, right? So, Klomer, in other words, now what is he driving at? It says, Nikab, the person who permitted the barber to round his head, okay? Ma pesha shehu loke. What sin has he committed that he deserves Malkus? Lav shein bo maaseh hevi, right? It is a law, as we say, in which there is no physical action on his part. Velo lilka, and he doesn't get Malkus for that. So this is the question, right? So he continues, yes.
Kolomar is, in other words, it's not apparently.
Right, Kolomar means in other words. Literally is to say, as if to say, is something like that. Okay. Apparently, I would have to say as follows. I mean, it's not explained really by Rashi. I have to tell you that honestly. Okay, it's not really explained by Rashi, but as I analyze this particular statement, it seems to me that what he's saying is he has not committed any kind of an action that deserves getting Malkus. What do you mean? Instead of eating it from a dish, he ate it from a sieve. So for that, he gets Malkus. He should have eaten it out of a dish, right? He should have eaten it maybe out of a basket or something. Whatever. No. Lav shein bo maaseh, he's still violating something.
Yeah, but it's
the violation is lo sakifu, okay?
No, eating kibarim from a kibara,
yeah,
is no lav at all.
I agree with you.
So why does Rashi come up with saying that this is an example?
It's not unless maybe there's another possibility. I mean, I'm trying to think and see what the relevance may be. All right. We know that fruit sometimes is subject to infestation, right? And naturally, we've already learned a long time ago this problem about a bria. In other words, if you eat a creature, you know, you're not allowed to, okay? You deserve Malkus for that, okay? So, in that particular case, maybe what he's saying is, look, maybe the guy did not, you know, let's say, put water on it or something in order to wash it away, okay? And he ate it directly the way it came, out of the sieve, in which he had put it in order to strain it, okay? So, but is this still the kind of an action that deserves Malkus? That's the question.
In other words, he's saying this is not such a gefelika thing. He hasn't done anything terrible. That's all. Didn't do anything terrible. Right. Didn't do anything terrible.
I
don't see any other explanation for it. Okay.
I think I sort of agree with what Rona's saying. I can see in the example of the person who's sitting and having his ear shorn.
Right.
All right. Well, maybe we say that in effect. Wash ink or master.
Right.
Effect, he's
right.
Not
he's just sitting
anything.
Quietly, not doing anything.
But
okay.
Here,
yeah.
This example is very puzzling. I mean, I don't follow it either.
Okay. So I say, I don't have a direct answer for you.
You hire somebody to kill somebody else.
Oy vey, chas v'shalom.
Do you get
Malkus
for that?
But the other person did it, right. We have, of course, the Gemara and Sanhedrin says, you know, that the one who does the action is the one who deserves the punishment. Because if it's a conflict between a human who tells you what to do and the Rabbeinu Shel Olam who tells you what to do, then in that case, there's no question. You have to listen to the Rav, right, and not to the Talmud, as they say. In other words, you have to listen to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam and, you know, not to the other person, okay? Naturally, the person who sent them also would be punished. But the actual person, you know, the one who deserves the death penalty is the one who actually carried out the death penalty, okay? Yeah. Well, yeah, right. But as I say, you know, I don't see the analogy to this business about eating the dates out of a sieve. I mean, this I don't see. That's why I'm racking my brains a little bit, you know, to try to find exactly what it is. But I agree with you. The analogy is not perfect. However, all I can say is that obviously the Talmud understood that he was getting rebuked for this particular action. And that what business did he have to say that you know that chayav hamakiv hanikav, right? So therefore, they're going to look for a situation in the moment where maybe we could also say that the nikav is. But before we can find that situation, he first has to object to what he heard because of the fact that if a person sits back and does nothing, then this is lav shem b'mas, and we don't get malchus for that. Okay, all right. So, the analogy is not the world's greatest.
Maybe it's the extreme analogy that's so far out that it doesn't make sense.
Maybe. I'm willing to accept any logical explanation. Okay. Mm. No.
It's funny, it's an argument that stretches over 1,000 years.
Right, right.
Well, I think he's trying to point out that by eating dates anyway, it wouldn't be any wouldn't be getting malchus.
Right.
So.
All right, but as I say, I mean, why should he choose specifically, you know, to eat dates out of a sieve? So that's why I said maybe it's because he's thinking in terms of infestation or something, and that you should put the dates in the sieve in order to get the impurities out to wash it and so on. You know, maybe this is what he had in mind. Okay, but if the guy simply ate without having washed it, has he really violated the law in the Torah?
Hmm.
Where's the kavanah? I mean, let's say there were bugs, whatever. Where's the kavanah? He wasn't warned and he wasn't anything.
Right.
There's no kavanah even to do it. Actually.
Right. Obviously, he didn't have the kavanah in order to eat the bugs.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
The only people I know who would eat bugs are entomologists. I mean, willingly. Like these guys who eat rattlesnakes.
Chocolate ants.
Yeah, ants, right, exactly. They'll even cover it with chocolate, and the voice was, no, how Michael.
Grasshoppers.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, no. Won't have a seat.
Yeah. The Amalekha Mani.
Where are we?
Okay. Oh, in the Gemara. He says to him, tell me, did he tell you? You see, remember it says over there that Tanei Tana Kamid Rav Chisna, right? So Rav Chisna is asking him, and you know, Rav Chisna is the one who put in the objection. So he says to him, tell me, did he tell you who is the author of the statement, namely Echad Hamakiv Hanikov? You understand? So apparently it fits the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, because he says it's Rabbi Yehuda he.
It has to be Rabbi Yehuda. Why? How do we know that it would be the idea of Rabbi Yehuda, namely that both the Nikav as well as the Makiv deserve Malkus? The Omar, because Rabbi Yehuda holds that Lav She'en Bo Maaseh Lo Ken Olav. He holds the opinion that if you violate a law, even though you're not doing anything, you still deserve Malkus for it. So, as I said, he is a minority opinion, and in general, the halacha doesn't follow him in this particular case. Okay. So, we're still trying to find out where would this be operative, right? So, Rava Omer, Rava comes up with an answer. He says, B'makif li'atzmo, b'divrei hakol. He says, where the man actually is doing his own
hair.
He's doing it himself, right?
Hmm.
So, in other words, in that case, he's doing something active. He takes the razor and he does it himself, or he takes, you know, whatever he's using. Okay? The divrei hakol. And everybody would be in agreement in that particular case that what? Yeah. That he himself would do it, that he deserves markets for it. Okay? Ravashi Omer. Ravashi comes with a slightly different interpretation. He says, Bimisayeya, the divrei hakol. Bimisayeya, lisayeya in Hebrew means to help out, right? So, in other words, if this guy was sitting in the barber chair, right? And then when he saw the guy, you know, the makiv, in other words, the barber was working on him, you know, to shearing his head around over here. So he said, here, do this. Here, do that. So in other words, he's really helping the barber. So in that case, he also deserves malchus because he should not have encouraged. Then, in other words, there is a maaseh, there is an action that he is guilty of, you see. So then he deserves it. So then we see that it would be Echad Hamakiv Andikot. Yes?
I have a problem with this.
Yes, Lord Helm.
Okay. If you're going to say that if